Welcome back to the Danko Jones Podcast.
Hey, Nick.
Hi.
You were on time today.
Yes.
Which is a welcome thing. I always welcome that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank the Toronto Transit Commission. Thank the fact I was closer to your undisclosed location.
You know, the reason why I'm making a big deal about it is we have Megan and George Pettit on the podcast. They live out of town. They live in Hamilton, which is, what, an hour away out of Toronto?
Pretty much.
And when they came over to my place, they arrived before you did.
Yeah.
And you live here.
Right. And I probably, well, what I like to do, this is a little trick of the trade, I'll tell you, I'll share with you. Sometimes I actually get here about a half hour early, and I'll hide in a garbage can outside of your building and just survey what's going on, like a neighborhood watch thing. And sometimes there's crime and I got to stop the crime. And a lot of the reason I'm late has to do with crime stopping, neighborhood watch stuff.
So what you're saying is I live in a terrible neighborhood.
Yeah, you basically live in I'm trying to think of a comparable neighborhood, like
Thunderdome.
Thunderdome or like Mordor, or kind of live in the Mordor of Toronto.
Okay.
The Mordor capital.
Well, Megan and George came by, and it was great to have them by. Between the two of them,
How much do they weigh between the two of them?
I'm not sure, but between the two of them, there's a lot of connections between the two of us. Obvious one, of course, right off the bat, George was the singer of Alexis on Fire. He has a new band called Dead Tired. Dead Tired are on New Damage Records, which is our label in Canada, so we're kind of label mates. Megan is a stand-up comedian.
She's on Twitter. I'm on Twitter. You're on Twitter. George is on Twitter.
You and Megan have done shows together.
Yeah, she opened up a show for me in Toronto, and I've done shows with her in Hamilton. And that's been fun. She's so hilarious. She's a great comedian.
Yeah.
She's great at Twitter, and she's a swell person.
I got to say, she is hilarious on Twitter. Now, I don't know right off the top of my head her handle, but I think it's @MeganPettit.
I think it is that simple, @MeganPettit.
Right.
But I think it might be like Megan S. Pettit. Like I feel
there, or there's an underscore in there. Anyways, anyone who does a search will find her.
Look up Megan Pettit.
She's pretty much a bullseye Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, well,
profile person.
It's like the best way to be a Twitter, and I'm not this way, I think, is to decide what you're going to talk about. And she talks about sort of like sexy guys. She makes jokes about sexy guys all the time. She's like, I want to pinch these sexy guys' butts. And that's a good wheelhouse. Yeah. I feel like I turned that compliment into just an inaccurate description of what her Twitter was. So check it out, guys and gals. George,
are you hungover or what is your problem?
I'm tired, and I'm a little hungover. I did a comedy show last night at a place called The Bristol in Toronto. It's a British pub.
Can we move on to Megan and George, please?
Well, you don't want to hear about why I'm hungover. Who expects someone to have sex at 4:30 in the morning?
It was that your evening?
Much less do a good job at it.
That was your evening? I love how you're complaining about getting laid.
Well, when you're so bad at it, you'd complain. It's like, that would, basically it feels like someone chopped my leg off and was like, let's go for a run. That's how I feel when I'm tired.
It started at 4:30 and ended at what, 4:37?
I would say 4:28. We somehow actually broke the speed of light and sound and went backwards.
Can we get back to the Pettits, please? But I also want to extend a thank you to George, who, before you arrived, presented me with his old leather jacket, which I saw on Instagram. Ood and odd, he was giving it away, and I think I was the first person to reach out to his offer. I want to say thanks to George for bringing
it
over.
Do you wear the jacket a lot?
Sorry?
Oh, sorry, I interrupted you.
What?
Do you wear the jacket a lot?
Well, it's been like -3 to -15 this week, so not right now. But yeah, I've taken it out on a stroll.
Walked through the neighborhood.
Yeah. No one saw that. I wanted to mention it here.
You should wear that leather jacket and go into a high school. And like when you see someone who can't open their locker, you just like hit it with your elbow.
Hey. Yeah,
like, flip right
like
open.
Fonzie.
Yeah. Or Fonzie. Or
Flonzie.
Or Flonzie. Or
Flonzie.
Maybe Big Moose would have done that too in the Archie series.
I think they have a great dynamic together. They came in here laughing their heads off at something. So I think they're a great couple.
Maybe they should have a podcast.
That's a great idea.
Not to create
throw out there.
Competition, but I could see that happening. And I think that they have a lot of collaborative energy. And I think because they've made comedy things together.
As you will hear on this
podcast. And maybe that's a good place for them to go. I definitely think she's really funny and George is really funny. And really, he's probably more handsome than 94% of the population. And that's just a side note.
I also noticed that he expressed interest in playing with your band, Wrong Hole.
Wrong Hole. We might break up, though.
Oh, Jesus. You just made shirts.
Yes. But no, I don't know.
And George remembered to bring the leather jacket for me, but you today forgot to bring me a Wrong Hole
t-shirt. I'm just
trying
to get you to go to the Wrong Hole show.
I'll go.
Just using, yeah.
I'll go to the Wrong Hole Dead Tired show.
Oh.
Is this...
Like, we should have asked them to play this show Friday.
Oh, they anyway, might have done it. Listen,
done it.
Can I tell you something? Yeah. Is this whole thing you're putting across on this intro filled with energy and vitality? Is this your Dead Tired tribute?
Yes.
To Dead Tired?
Yeah, I'm just trying to be... I know that we were doing the intro for George from Dead Tired today. So I said, I'll be Dead Tired.
Yeah.
And
it's
a good thing they're now called Dead. I would have showed up and just been a dead body.
Right.
You would have had to throw me in a limestone pit or something.
Well, this introduction was a fantastic idea to bring you on, Nick.
I know.
I'm sure George and Megan will love how we've introed this discussion with them.
I know. My brain is not good right now.
Yeah.
Honestly,
you bring it back to how you're so tired because you had sex. And
I didn't have sex.
You're having
just
sex.
Saying that. No, but it was.
So basically, our dynamic, as everybody listening is, Nick is doing this, and I'm trying to wrangle it back to normality, getting it back on the track, making sure the podcast is professional, sounding good.
Right. I'm like Howard Stern. You're Gary Delabate.
So you're Howard.
Zorro.
You're Howard?
I'm Howard.
And I'm Gary.
Yeah.
So here we go. Here is the George and Megan Pettit podcast. We're going to end with Dead Tired. Nick is super tired. You're wearing my God, what are you wearing, Nick?
What is this?
It's a
striped shirt.
God, you know, I really want to reference an 80s figure who is in very hot water these days, so I'd rather not go there.
You think it's an Arsenio sweater?
It's more of another sweater-wearing comedian known for his sweaters, but we're not going to go there.
Well, I think I'll just put in a good word for this sweater.
And How do we end this?
I'd like to say a quick jello. I'd like to say a quick jello to George and Megan if they're listening to their own podcast episode. It's a great episode. You know, don't be Rudy to your parents.
Podcast is not brought to you by Gordon Gartrell.
Yeah, you have to.
Okay, so Nick, here it is. George and Megan Pettit. Let's start.
All right.
The Daniel Jones Podcast is the best around. Nick Lennigan is Daniel's go out to for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes. Damn it, from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down, down.
Yo, motherfuckers. You like Kiss? I love fucking Kiss. Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley are the fucking shiznit, man. And I also love my punk rock, too. You know, that fucking Henry Rollins is a badass motherfucker. You know who else is a bad motherfucker? Danko Jones. That OG lay down that pimped out podcast like no other. He loves his Kiss and Black Flag. I mean, I love that fucking Danko Jones podcast. And if you don't like that Danko Jones podcast, go fuck yourself.
And I said the Danko Jones podcast makes
So we have Megan and George Pettit. They're here, and it's nice to have them here. We hatched this idea together, right, Nick?
Via email.
Yeah. We thought it would be. We both thought it would be a great idea.
Yeah, and there was certainly no prior discussion between any other parties.
there's connections between all of us in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Nick
sleeps on our futon.
Sleeps on our futon from time to time
in Hamilton. Because I go to Hamilton when I want to kind of get the grit and the dirt between my fingers, you know, and feel like what real people are like. I live in the big metropolitan city. And, you know, the great thing about Hamilton is there's literally just one horse. It's a one horse town.
Sometimes when I want to live in a Pete Seeger song, I take the old train.
When I want to make a car, there's only one place I can go.
That's right. Hamilton. You know, you want to forge something.
Come
down to Hamilton.
You know, a lot of smithies.
Yeah. Going on there. No, that's I don't know. Hamilton's a very.
I love Hamilton.
I love it too, and I think I moved there with a lot of those. No, because I feel like
always the measure of reaction.
I love it too. I love it.
Question mark.
I do love it. We could have lived anywhere. I think when I first moved there, though, I had that real I don't like these phonies in Toronto, man. Right. This is like a real place. And then,
I don't want to be like thinking of the different places I can eat, like every meal of the day. Every day.
I hate the convenience and all this stuff. And
I want to drive to my mailbox,
man. And
So you picked the worst neighborhood in
Hamilton. I moved there, and I
really?
Lived there
That's
for like
the worst neighborhood?
Well, where we live, yeah.
Where we live
is a lovely neighborhood. I moved to Emerald Street in Hamilton, which is largely known. There was a lot of halfway houses on my street and a lot of prostitution and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it was cheap to live there, and I got a big 2-bedroom apartment that was.
Somebody had been curing meats.
Yeah, that's right. When they showed me the apartment, there was a makeshift like rack made out of like a broom handle, and the guy had like curing meats on
it.
And he was just like, I was like, smells kind of weird in here. We go in the bedroom, and he's curing meats.
But I think George chose that apartment solely so he could blame all the stenches on the curing meats previously.
That's I wrote that out for a long time.
Like 2 years later, it must be the cured meats.
Yeah, they used to cure meat here. It's been 2 years, George. It's been 2 years.
It's the cured meats. Light a match. That's how you solve
it. It's not the pile of unwashed. Just a shame.
Remember, even your ice cubes tasted bad. Remember that?
Yeah.
Like, that's how bad that apartment was. You know when your cubes are tainted, that something's up.
It's a bad apartment. I was not good at living by myself.
How old were you?
I want to say it was 22,
you're
21.
Also not good at living with someone.
No, living with someone I'm not great at either. But by myself is getting really bad. It's you know, those
22, 21
shows.
Is really, I feel like that's young to live alone. Were you living alone?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. I don't even know what you're getting.
Alexis on Fire is from you guys are from St. Catharines?
I'm originally from Grimsby. So everyone else is from St. Catharines. Grimsby is like the halfway point between St. Catharines and Hamilton. It's like 18,000 kind of beach kind of city.
I think we went through this last time.
Maybe we did, yeah.
I know Megan she came to a Neil Hamburger show that I was on a while ago. Long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that. You're very funny on
Twitter. Wait a minute. Megan does stand-up. She's
and your stand-up is very funny.
Well, thank you.
And... then George also that I know too.
George,
you're,
I know,
you're
I'm
very
just,
funny yeah. as well.
And now I've come down to Hamilton a few times, and yes, I sleep on their beds.
Megan, how long have you been doing stand-up? Because anyone who listens to the podcast, I'm fascinated by stand-up comedians.
It really hasn't been that long. It's only been a few years.
George, but doesn't it feel like a few you can't years, believe it's been a few years already?
But a few that years for a band is you're like you're kind of middle-aged as a band. You know, like a lifespan for a band is like. What is it? What do they say? Name bands have 7-year lifespan?
Yeah, but I feel like stand-up, it's not the same for stand-up comedians. Because stand-up, there are stand-up comedians who have been around for like 15 years who are still very much they don't know anything.
Or they just finally figured it out. Like sometimes it can take years and years. Yeah. Like I don't think I figured it out.
You're still at the point where you're just like writing and performing and you're like, I don't know. I feel that way too sometimes, you know? It's like, and that's what's crazy, is like you do it for much longer and it's like it's like you were saying, it's like it doesn't really solve itself and you won't necessarily, like the validation is so odd that you get. Really hard to define.
For sure,
in Canada, I think, you know, it's because
what's the validation like? Well, let's give them a round of applause.
I think the validation is like every single step, you just are like, oh, that was that step. Okay, we're done with that, and that paid. That's $800, and I still don't feel like I do this.
You
know, like I did this. I did this TV spot, but it's not like it wasn't a dream of mine. So I don't know. You know, I got these iChannel things, and it's like, I don't feel like I've done television, even though I did some weird TV taping once, you know.
But would you ever wake up and go, ah, this is where I wanted to be?
I mean, maybe if I were in Cancun.
If you were in Cancun.
is that how you felt when you walked on stage? When you how is it that you became a stand-up comedian?
So George was away for about 4 months. So I was basically a single parent, and I was getting into a new career, and it was actually paused just due to logistics, right? So I couldn't work. I couldn't really do anything. I went out. It was actually a Neil Hamburger show.
Yeah.
I don't think you were on that one, though.
Yeah.
It was Barry Taylor. Patrick Coppolino was hosting it. And
That would have been like maybe 2 years ago or something.
So definitely. I went to that show, and... Barry was on stage and he was telling a joke, and he ended up telling a joke of something that I had actually rapped in in this like joke rap band that Ben Rispin had put on. So it was one of my rhymes.
Can we go on a tangent about this joke rap band?
Joke rap band.
So there's Barry, and I knew Barry. I had met him previously from George, and he says this joke, and then a lot of people laughed, and I thought, hey, wait a minute, is that funny? I didn't really know. And then afterwards, I was talking to him, and I said, hey, I like spit some rhyme that was very similar to that joke you said. And I started talking about the group, and he said, oh, I actually got it from Ben Rispin. He said I could use it, and it was turned out that
Ben lifted and
lyric to Barry. And
That's really funny. Wow, that's so crazy.
Oh, that's weird, though. Did you feel did you feel like someone took from you?
Oh, no, I actually felt great because I actually got to witness, because I never knew that anything I said could be... Like, I would
That's
write...
That's like an empowering kind of thing in a weird way. To have someone tell you, to know
steal
that something...
Steal your material?
Well, but when you don't necessarily...
But at that point, it wasn't material.
It was just... It was like a joke song, and I guess Ben had said the line to Barry just as, like, in passing.
Oh, I see.
And Barry's like, that's funny. Can I use that, right? And then Ben said, go for it, right? Not thinking that it wasn't a joke. I never had said it on stage or anything. So I was talking to Barry about that, and then I started talking to Patrick, who's the host, and he's like, well, I host an open mic. Why don't I just throw you on?
The way with comedy, too, is, like, you kind of have to be, like, like someone who is like useful in several ways. Like if you know how to drive, especially
if you have a car,
it opens up your opportunities as a comedian, like tons, just because people might go, oh, I need to drive someone to drive me to the show, and you can do comedy at the
for
show.
Sure.
And then, yeah.
Well, I am noticing there is a lot of give and take, especially in Toronto. Everybody kind of wants their own room. Everybody wants to have people at their show. So if you go on my show, then I get to go on your show.
I love that, but I hate it. You know, like, I love that people are nice that way, but I also am like, what if I just want to put on a good show where people are happy watching all the comedians?
Exactly.
And what if someone gives me, you know, so it's like, and what if this person is not right for that particular show?
Exactly.
You know?
Well, that happened. I started putting on my own shows in Hamilton, and what I wanted was very specific, only a few comedians, very specific kind of comedy style, and then I knew that my friends would be comfortable. They wouldn't get heckled, they wouldn't get offended, you know. Not like they would be, you know, they have blue material. It's just not, you know. So then, So then I brought a bunch of people out, and the first one was a great show.
Yeah, the first George one's great. DJ'd.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But all these like comedians showed up, and they're like, "Hey, can I jump on? Can I jump on?" And actually, one comedian he was quite drunk, and got really angry that I would put on a show, and he wanted to do it because he's been doing it a lot longer. And he was quite aggressive, and then he started actually like yelling during like the opening comedian, and had to leave, and it was pretty. Wow. But that's it, because that happens all the time, though. People go, hey, there's an audience, can I jump on? And then it gets saturated. Now you have 13 comedians and people are bored. And it's now like 11:30 at night and people want to go home and they don't want to watch the headliner.
There's a room with people listening. Everybody pile on.
Everybody,
you know,
I've got
some
jokes.
Some shows are like, if you kind of position it like that's the kind of show it is and the bar is fine with it, then that's what it is, you know.
Sure.
You know. That's not what they should be like most of the time, I don't think.
So when you...
When there's 8 bands on a show.
Exactly. When you first went on stage, did it feel like the right thing to do? Were you comfortable immediately, or...?
No, I'm a very nervous person.
But was there a show that you did where it was just like, yeah, this is...
At one point I was like, I'm my own worst enemy. Like, I'm just getting myself worked up in a frenzy, and it's worse. Like, when I'm up there and I'm nervous, then they're going to feed off that, and it's uncomfortable for everybody. Mm-hmm. So finally, I don't know why, I just said, just don't do that anymore. And I haven't done it since. And that was maybe...
There was a point where it turned, where, like, you still get really nervous before the shows kind of thing, but I remember, you know, because, like, in the beginning days, I would go and I would just, like... Oh God!
Oh, he's
please.
Awful in the audience.
I'm
like,
so
I can't,
bad.
He's because
I get so
dying.
Nervous for you, and you inevitably at some point you're gonna bomb. And there were some times
where
there was highs and lows, where like you'd have one night that was really good, and then there'd be a night that was really bad. And then I remember at one point five shows. Like consecutively where you were getting solid laughs, and it was a good, you'd put together a really solid, like, you know, 6 or 7 minutes that were great. And that was fun. It was really fun to go out to these, and it was.
And I let you come to shows.
You
again.
Let me come. Yeah, there was some heated.
Well,
he's sitting in the back of.
His face. Yes. No. Just horrified.
That is a level of trust. You know, obviously, you guys are, you know, have been together for so long and like get each other enough that I guess it's probably fine in terms of like, you know, she's funny, you know, so you love each other's sense of humor. But it's like, there is this thing with dating sometimes where people come to your shows and you're just like, oh my God, I hope this goes well. Or not.
Are you trying to impress? Are you trying to kill to impress whoever shows
up? I don't care. I mean, obviously, I don't care about that. I do not care about killing. I don't believe in killing. I believe in letting people live. You know? Yeah. I want to make crowds leave happy because they think they're funnier than me. You know, that's like, that's a public service.
Nick Flanagan's empowering young comics, letting them know they can get up there and do it.
I know, but that's actually fucking true. That is absolutely true, because I will have these shows that go so weird. I mean, especially that last show in Hamilton I did with you guys, where it was like, all of the, every aspect of it was running against me. It was like 1 a.m. by the time I went up.
Yeah.
You know, it was in a bar that was, there was no real central stage area.
You guys were
too many comics.
Yeah, Megan went up right before me. She did great, but there were too many comics, yeah. And there were too many, and there were a lot of people who were like doing it for the first time, which is like, it's kind of cool to have one person doing it for the first time
at
that type of a show.
Struggle, yeah.
Because it was like sort of a show put on by a musician, you know, so if it was someone from the scene was like doing comedy for the first time, that's great. But there were 3 people, one of which didn't even stay the whole time and did this thing in character where he was like, just like, it felt
He did like a Bob Newhart, like on the phone.
I felt
but
like
not
was,
Bob.
It was like
Buddy dropped a lot of like retards.
BuddyHead.com
like,
sketch show.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like a makeout club. if they had like a YouTube channel or something.
That's great.
Yeah. So he's got a show now.
Yeah, he has a show.
Yep. He'll be on here next podcast.
Yeah, so you should really get him. Actually, that'd be good for the podcast.
We actually just signed a deal where he'll be punching me in the face every day.
Yeah, every day. He's showing up at every one of your shows and heckling you.
But no, I just have these shows sometimes where it's like, you know, I play very disadvantageous places most of the time, whether it's that weed cafe for the other show or
what comedy is now.
I like the roller coaster of the sets sometimes. Wild. You know, it's pretty wild. I like going up and down and commenting on it at this point with shows, and you know, I don't mind doing that because I feel like it doesn't really matter to me if it like is like a weird sort of ebbs and flows of laughs and feelings. I dig that sort of, you know, like it's like I dig it.
Yeah, man.
Well, the thing with a weed cafe though is that if everybody's eating edibles and it all kicks in at the same time and they're so high that they're like they feel their glutes in the chairs more than they're listening.
You
to.
Can't bomb. It's,
oh, you can bomb so hard. That's how you bomb.
Everyone's gonna laugh.
You know, nobody laughs. And people laugh at weird stuff.
They really laugh when like they're just a little high because you can smoke and eat in the room. Mm-hmm. So if they're smoking, then it's great laughs. But once the edibles kick in, I don't know if you guys are aware of edibles, but sometimes you can't even watch a movie and it's like it gets
you're like crawling like on walls you're like, and stuff.
Yeah, your eyes just feel like crust, like they're all just made of crust.
You're aware of your eyes. That's you're what aware you're of aware. Your eyes. You're actually looking at your eyes
on stage. The other day I said that I couldn't sleep because I could feel my eyes.
Exactly. Yeah.
But people, I'll do things like I did two shows a couple weeks ago at that venue, and I was opening for a guy. And this first, I did the first set, and I was like, "That went fun. That was really fun." And the second one was like, "I'll do a different set. I'm totally cool to do another 10 minutes." And it's like, then I did the other 10 minutes, and it was like, "Eh." And then it's like that's the other thing is you sort of try to challenge yourself. If you try to challenge yourself, it can screw up.
Yeah.
You know, like you gotta, there's like a slight script, stick to the script idea, especially if you're doing like to different audiences, you know.
Well, it's so hard if you lose them because sometimes it can go down so low that you're just digging uphill to try to like get them back. And if you don't have enough time, like it's hard because a lot of times I'm doing like 10 minutes max or six minutes. And you find that you're writing a lot of like one-liner jokes, but then it's hard to get a flow too because you want to get the laughs and you want to hit them, but they can't really understand who you are.
It's hard to. It takes a long time to find who you are because it's like, okay, so you can write jokes, that's great, and then you're also, but if your personality isn't shining behind that, then there's kind of like this extra layer that isn't really being felt. I know it sounds crazy, but I'm pretty sure it's true.
It's
very
true, yeah.
And that's how I always used to think that there was like two types of beginner comedians. Like there was like people who could write jokes and people who were like huge personalities. And then it's always about sort of like on stage, you know. And then it's about kind of, you guys can't see my hands at back there in Radio Land.
They're coming together.
Podcast Land, I'm trying to merge the hands like they're
merging. They're coming together.
They're forming a pie piece now.
Interlacing pie. The fingers, and you know, you can kind of imagine that. Yeah, piece of
but
pie.
Well, George, like as watching her on stage when you're in the audience, and do you feel like you want to go up to every single person? Because that's what I would feel like. And just go laugh, goddamn! You just want to get all like.
That would be great if I saw.
The great nights are when you don't have to do that. When people kind of laugh and they're feeling it out. Most of the time, I just want to be I want to be just not. I don't want her to look at me and like or see me there. I'm just kind of like in the background, kind of.
And Megan, if you're with George's, if you're watching George's bands, are you like to the crowd? You're like, do you want to go up to them and be like, dance, dance?
I don't think it's the same thing because George is on stage with a whole bunch of other guys, so it's a group effort.
Yeah.
Whereas you're up there. That's the thing. That's the scariest thing about being a stand-up comedian is it's just like a party of one.
Well, it's so scary.
He gets to practice too before. Yeah. Right. Whereas you don't really get to practice.
Even if I practice, even if you write the shittest song, we can still get to play it in its entirety, and everyone has to listen to it.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't have this immediate up to the second, you know, like, review of what you're doing.
And the positive expectations is also, I think people want to laugh at comedians. I'm not really saying that. You know, they go in a lot of the time being like, well, I want to be entertained. But music, I feel people are expecting happiness or something to be made happy almost just by the fact that this entire structure exists, that they can hear music. It's so nice. Yeah. Comedy is a little different, where it's there's this thing where, you know, a lot of people for some reason think, oh, I could do that. And that's sort of in the back of their head, you know, this idea that, well, I'm funny, you know? Yeah, and so this person, I hope, is funnier than I am and my friends are. And then there's something where comedy is negative. You know, I just read this Bob Odenkirk interview where he said this, so I'm kind of... So
oh, is that Bob, the one that...
I think...
where he said comedy said, but there is this element of it being... You're kind of talking about bad experiences. You're sort of talking through bad experiences. You're having catharsis about all these bad experiences. So if you don't nail that and you're just kind of making people feel bad, people might know that it's going there. it's they're almost expecting to be reminded of bad shit.
There is an art to that. Just make them happy. If you can't do that properly, then just do a bunch of like one-liner happy stuff, you know, like it's make them feel something. But
I feel like that stuff is like a lot of people go to that. They go to like Blue or Dark Material, and that is like the Jimi Hendrix of stand-up comedy. Like, you have to be like, you have to be really good to like make someone feel comfortable by showing them something, you know, horrific, and then taking all the venom out of it. Like, like a perfect example is the Richard Pryor on Sunset Strip or whatever. Here he is talking about a time when he tried to kill himself by lighting himself on fire. And he has the crowd in stitches. And he's making light of all the really dark, the darkest moments in his life.
And inside, and like, he is crying.
Yeah.
Inside. So hard. And he's kind of lying, even on Sunset Strip.
But it's because it's artifice. That's,
you know?
it's beautiful. And it was like, it's so masterful.
Try to go for that right off the hop.
Oh, that's the worst.
And it's like,
if you've had a bad experience and you've been doing comedy for 5 years, don't address it, or for two, even five, you know, like, take your time. If you have some trauma in your life, you might not be able to deal with that on stage for quite some time, because you don't want your, like, your lack of on stage voice to underserve this insane story, or you know, like, traumatic thing, you know. And people don't want to think you're going through it, right? That's the main thing too, is like, if you go up there and you say, my house caught fire, I'm homeless.
People might not laugh.
But if you go, my house got fire, I was homeless, now I live in this shelter and it's great. Everyone will love it.
It's that easy. He's got it.
Free lesson, people.
I have this really great thing where it's like, oh, Nick, this premise sounds good. Where is it going? Nowhere. CBC is giving away a $500,000 budgeted primetime special. And by giveaway, I mean not giveaway at all, but actually, like, totally take away from everyone's time.
A special?
They've made a website called Comedy Coup, and it's basically all these people submitting ideas for shows and web series. And
you guys submitted.
Yes, we did.
When did you get bombed?
We had actually been working on this show, like, privately. Actually, Ben Rispin, the guy that said Barry could have a joke, it goes around, that I did a rap song with. We just started filming these sketches. We met with Ben and one of his oldest best friends, and just had some ideas, bounced them off, we thought, okay, let's try it out. So it was supposed to be a teaser, so we submitted a teaser, right? And we didn't really know what our premise was of the show, and submitted it, got through the first round, I think just barely we got through. So it was like 300, then it went down to 100, but they made it 110, so we made it like the 10 of the 110. But we got to the point where we're not going to make it. So why are we even bothering, like, putting so much time in? Because it's hard for our group even to get together.
And so it was a group? It wasn't just the two of you?
No,
it's Ben Rispin, six of us, kind of.
Yeah, Adam and then Phil. And, yeah, so we have a few guys. And But then it got to the point where you have to submit a Bible and a script for the first pilot. And
you don't have a lot of time to do that.
No, you don't at all. Yeah. And so George and I agreed that we would write it. And it was an angry Pettit household. Like, let me tell you.
Because Bible writing is for those not in the know. We're not talking about religious Bibles. We're talking about, like,
I'd rather write
a treatment. I would rather create a religion. It's like the treatment of it?
It's more like it's harder. I would say it's different than a treatment. A treatment is specifically for a movie, so that would be like just a long retelling of a story. Treatment is more like an outline. Mm-hmm. A Bible is what is a show? In short, first you say, then in long you say, what is a show? Then you say, here are the characters. Here's the world. And here's some episodes that are going to happen. So it's really...
So essentially any director could come look at your Bible and they could make the show and it would look reasonably like what you think.
People get paid thousands of bucks to write.
So this is the thing. So we have a child. He's 4.5.
We didn't.
So George is like, oh, I'm going to go. He's a good guy. And so George is like, I'm going to go work on the Bible. And it was just like, freedom. So George would be on his laptop, like playing online Candy Crush Saga. And then I would be like, yeah, I'm working on it too. And then I would just be huddled in a corner. Welcome to the world of writing.
This is writing.
And he would stay and work on it. And I would say, so finally when it was coming down to like the hour, I'm like, George, you get your ass up there. You got.
We were just like.
And then
in
he's
the
like,
thick.
Oh, whirl! And he goes up. And then hours and hours later, he goes back to check it, and our son had deleted it all.
Oh, yeah, that was great too. Yeah, I put in a solid 3 hours straight.
Which is the only 3 hours he put in.
Well, no, then I put in another.
This is not. This is not abnormal. This is not. Look, putting in it's hard to write. Oh my god,
3 hours got me to like 1/3 of the thing done.
Script, like something.
And I was just like, oh great. And then Owen went on my computer looking for Netflix. And I don't know what he did. He closed it, and it wasn't saved, and it was.
Let me tell you, that household. Wow.
Dark moments in my life.
Yeah.
That's up there. I'm
surprised you guys didn't hear me yell.
Oh, God. So, yeah, either way, we are drawing up the divorce papers, pretty much.
That's what we're working on, actually.
And
no,
this is
the
writing, process for us. It's just us, like, seething across the table from one another, working on separate projects, and then she's just like, what do you think of this? And I'm like, I don't give a fuck!
Because our approaches are way different, and how we get along is George is very laid back, right? I love, he's like that, and he doesn't stress anything. Yeah. I stress every single thing in this entire world, right? And and so when you, the two, like, which works in marriage, because sometimes.
Yin
and
yang, whatever.
Like, yang, blah, blah. Blah, there's Nick's doing a jerking off motion. I know.
No, I didn't.
See it,
actually is. I'm jerking off. Yeah. Go on. I'm not sure. You mentioned computers. That got me thinking about all the possibilities. Got excited.
So we're
great at writing sketches. Like, the sketches to write them is like, it's so wonderful to write a sketch, but to actually hash out like detail,
we're good at like coming up with funny ideas and then hashing them out with the guys. But when it comes to actually doing work and stuff, we're not great at that. And then like so we do this thing, we get the Bible done, the script done. We send it to Phil. Phil makes it look professional. It's like there's like graphics and it looks amazing and
it
looks really
in
professional.
Right at the exact moment that you could be voted out. And
so
it,
essentially,
it was,
yeah, what I'm getting at is we sent it in and then literally like the next morning we woke up and we were cut from the concert. So.
I have a theory that most YouTube mean commenters are from Canada. I don't know why. I just have this weird feeling that they're just like that's like
8 out of 10 negative comments are from Canada.
Yeah, yeah. It just is this weird thing where I feel people are just really ready to be like, I'm not,
because everybody's so like nice here. I think.
So they can finally anonymously be mean. Yeah.
Really mean.
But, like, we had never really... well, I had never really experienced that. And George is like, welcome, because he's obviously experienced
Guess
it
what?
Right, with music. Like,
And you put something out there, people are going to tell you whether they like it or not,
like, no
anonymously on the internet, and they're not gonna sugarcoat it.
Oh, no.
They're going to be
no.
This is shit, you should quit comedy and probably kill yourself.
Oh, pretty much. Pretty much.
You make Hitler look like Miss America.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
That was
a weird...
You make Hitler look like Miss America.
I don't know where I'm
trying to put
that right.
That comment.
We're just going to put that right at the beginning of the podcast.
There it is.
Have you had, what's the worst thing you've had as a YouTube comment? Let's revisit that.
Oh, man. When, this is the best thing. This is the best, because this happened when I announced that I was playing a Dead Tired. Got picked up by, I don't know, AP. Top comment was like this guy, and it was the most specific breakdown
worst.
He was just like, no, it was great, actually, because he was like, first of all, this is garbage. Who cares what this has been did or whatever? Yeah. And then he starts going into like, I promise you they'll probably won't make more than 2 albums and no member will clear more than $20,000 a year.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this guy, what is this? Like, this guy's an industry insider. He knows. To me, I was like, $20,000 a year? Holy shit, man.
I
just hit the fucking jacket. Is this David Geffen?
$20,000 a year off of music? That's not so bad.
Yeah.
Is this off of music? Is this separate of music?
Yeah, each member?
Member, yeah.
The band will bring in $100,000.
Yeah. Okay.
Like that was his big dig, and I was like, this is incredible. But yeah, no, people have said all sorts of, you know, they don't like,
you what
know,
you think
people
of?
Don't like stuff.
The funniest.
Yeah, Danko, who hates you?
There's a whole rumor about Prince playing Massey Hall.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it was pulled or whatever. It wasn't happening.
Yeah, it was like his band was rehearsing or something, wasn't it?
Well, the girl who plays guitar in Third Eye Girl, which is his backing band, is from Mississauga.
Mm.
So there is a Toronto connection.
Doesn't he have a house on the bridal path?
He used to have
too?
A house on the bridal path.
Did we talk about this on the last podcast?
So.
We're interested.
But anyways, so I start tweeting at around 8 o'clock going, Prince is crushing it at Massey Hall right now. It is. It is on. I am here, and I'm like, this is amazing, and all this stuff. And then I was like hashtagging Prince TO, which was the hashtag going around. And you know, then people start getting in on it. I bring in Decisive, and the two of us start going, we're here. It's awesome. You know. So about an hour, 2 hours later, this guy starts going, "Fuck you and your band. I waited in line all day. Fuck you. You hate Prince fans. You hate Prince fans." And then I go, how can I hate myself? I love Prince, right?
Yeah.
And then I go on his profile. He's like this 18-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
Who, so suddenly,
18-year-old kids into Prince?
Yeah, sure. I was like,
that's respect.
From what I gathered from his profile, it was Prince and Blink-182.
Right.
First I started going back and forth of him, going like, hey, like, no, what's with the hate tweet? And then I realized I'm going back and forth with
probably
an 18-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy.
He's on coke.
I am a loser.
That's why he has those tastes. Those are three acts that, like, if you're really flying high,
you want in there. That happens. There's a kid who does that on my personal Twitter all the time, where a big show will happen, like at Riot Fest it happened, where he'd take a picture from way at the back so you can't really see who's on stage, and he'd be like, Alexis on Fire just got back together, oh my god, they're doing it. And he did it again at Supercrawl.
So he
keeps tweeting at me like, George, man, thanks so much for coming back for one more show. There's a lot of that. That's great. Joel,
of course.
Joel, the head of Dynalone Records and Bedlam Music Management and all this stuff. He was working at Sam the Record Man in St. Catharines when we were playing local shows. He promoted local shows in St. Catharines and all this stuff. And we tour around together. And he was just kind of like the older guy from the scene who, you know, hey, here's how you do this. And he helped us out a lot. And then he became a manager at the same time we were becoming a band, kind of thing. And we actually picked him over other I don't know, people who had like big bands. Stars. Yeah, yeah, like good bands too. Like I don't know, we were being courted by a guy who, maybe I won't even talk about it because I don't want to be like, yeah, we told that guy to fuck off. But like, you know. Right. But he was a good guy. He was just like an American booking agent who had booked a lot of bands that we Maurice really liked. Maurice Starr. Mm-hmm. We were just like, I don't know, maybe we'll just go with Joel because he might know, you know, he's here and he's put a lot of time in and all this stuff. And now he's the head of Canadian music.
Yeah, he's
a powerhouse. So like, he's been, yeah.
Yeah, I was a good choice. There's one time we had a big time manager courting us as well, and we were playing, it was like CMW or North by Northeast or something. We met in the big hotel that all the people who are out of town, they stay at the Royal York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we had like a meeting with him, and then the evening we played, and then he didn't stick around. He just gave us someone gave a note to give to us from him. He was gone. Mm-hmm. And it just said something to the effect of, 1 year from now, stadiums or something like that. We looked at it and we started laughing. Oh, we couldn't believe it. Oh, that man. Kind of stuff is, I thought that just was relegated to like sitcoms.
Yeah.
You know, it's real. It's totally real.
Yeah.
Yeah. We sacked our first American booking agent because, and we were not an appealing act, I think, for a lot of the American agents. So they sent this guy, and he was like, and he was probably, he was on the wrong side of 50. Like, he was like 56 or something. And he's, and you know, white hair, white chest hair coming out from his unbuttoned shirt, like kind of thing. And he shows up and he's just like, hey guys, you know, I'm thinking, think I can get you on the road with Evanescence. That's what I'm thinking. And we're like, okay, all right. And then like, I remember there was this unbelievable moment where we're in our van, we're about to leave. And the guy pulls out in his convertible, and he's like, see you around, guys. Great band. And then he drove off. But the best thing was, one of the guys from the other bands on the tour was standing like behind his car that pulled up. So when he pulled off, and he was just like standing there, and he's like, great band, guys.
Oh God!
Eventually, we got hooked up with a great booking agent in the States. But it was just like we have to have a talk. Like, this is not it.
When that happens in front of the other bands on the bill, are you not totally embarrassed?
Oh, mortified. But at the same time, it was a great dig. We also appreciated a good like fuck you.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I don't know, because that was kind of
that moment to be commented on as soon as it happened.
Oh yeah, 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 it was great. Yeah.
I was in a Danko Jones video.
Yeah, you were.
Cadillac.
Hey.
Yeah.
I was in no videos.
No.
When we first started dating, like, because there was it was hotly contested because, you know, other girlfriends that were no longer girlfriends of other members were in videos. So I had just like come along to this video shoot in this grocery store, and they needed extras. So like someone on some walkie-talkie was like, psh, okay, we need to get some more extras. And he's like, you want to be in the video? And I was like, oh, maybe ask the singer, because we just started dating, right? And then, so then all you hear is like, that's a negative, he doesn't want her in the video. And it's so loud, just booming over like the mega system in the grocery store, and all these other like people in the background all looking. Like,
it was not that I wouldn't love to see you.
This isn't cherry pie. I can carry
that was
years.
A hot point of, you know, I knew it would be like one of those situations where like, she's in the video, you know, someone would be like, she's in the video, why wasn't I invited to be in the video?
Right.
Like,
definitely.
Kind of like, there were some not so good dynamics at that time between girlfriends and weirdness and all this sort of stuff. So,
but I didn't really know that, so I was just like, okay.
And then we had done a video where two of the girlfriends at the time had been in the video.
Yes.
And I remember that irking me a bit and being like, this is why we could use.
So you were like trying to stay true to yourself and who you were.
I was trying to humiliate
Megan
publicly.
Because he was
publicly.
Ashamed of me. So I wasn't,
if anything, I was trying to humiliate her.
It's a good version of playing hard to get.
Yeah. She, you know,
yeah. playing publicly announcing Don't Want.
Yeah, oh yeah.
All right.
Great. All right, yeah. Really good, guys.
Ooh. All right.
Well, Thank you for having us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks yeah, for coming over.
Thanks a lot.
I guess, do we all have time for lunch?
Yes.
I think so, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
All right.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yay.